Hey guys, this is the Brothers Whips number 38. Today we've got a packed house. I say packed house compared to the normal, I guess we do. As we should, it is currently the 7th of January 2017. You guys haven't heard from us from, I guess since November. And oddly enough, a couple of you actually said, hey, where are you guys at? Why haven't we heard from you? And I just assumed this was all going into kind of a black hole void, so it's nice to know some people are actually listening. So I'm looking at the top right on the video here, or rather left, because I'm ridiculous. We've got Thomas Kernuck out of Slovakia.
Hello, hello.
And then top right, we've got Andrew Thrift, originally Australia, but currently residing in Austin, Texas.
Andrew Thrift, what are you talking
about?
Oh,
I'm sorry, Andrew Cox.
I'm the better looking Andrew.
It's been so long since you've been on one, I forget who you are nowadays. Anyway, moving on down, we've got Mike Hammett from Chicago.
Hey.
Warm, toasty Chicago. And then we've got Justin Miller from Virginia right here.
Howdy.
Excellent. So we are going to do something very unprecedented wherein we are going to keep all the topics as short as possible because since it has been a month and a half since we've talked to you guys, there's quite a laundry list of things, so we're going to attempt to move through them. I say we're going to attempt to. We always diverge, much to the chagrin of Thomas up there. But I think that's where a lot of the good stuff comes out, right? So, jumping right in, Mike put in WISP America 2017. That's going to be in Memphis, correct, in March?
Correct. March 14th through the 16th at the Sheraton Memphis Downtown Hotel. WISPA has a spring show and a fall show. The fall show is always in Vegas. The spring show kind of rotates around the eastern part of the country. And that's it's the smaller attended of the two shows, but they really do bring in different audiences. You know, those that can only travel so far, go to one show or the other. I'm on the agenda committee, but I haven't attended. So hopefully I'm still on the agenda committee and can make a call, but been quite busy.
Excellent. Well, I'm actually really interested in this Memphis one. As you guys may know, I lived in Memphis for about a year. I've been back a couple of times since, but it's been a while, and I'd really love a convenient excuse to go back. It also lines up to be, spring break, right? So maybe take the wife, not worry about the kids, see all the old friends. Working this WISP show. Mike, get me on one of those agendas. Get me on one of the panels. That would be cool.
I'm probably going to.
You go to all of them. That's...
Yeah, because I tag along.
Well, when you whore yourself out like that, you can go somewhere.
Excellent, excellent. Moving right along. Midwest IX is, it says STL and new branding. What does that mean, Mike?
That means that we are actually finally launching our St. Louis Exchange. It's been 2.5 years trying to get this online. Almost all of it, paperwork, negotiation, waiting on dealers to put their stuff together. But we have our launch party on the 19th. And then hopefully within the next couple of weeks after that, we'll actually be on board. Hopefully all the gear's in by the 19th. So while we're down there, we can, get everything set up. We already have more people that say they want connectivity in St. Louis than we have in Indianapolis after, 2 years. And, Indy's still growing. We had a new member every couple months. We've already got, 30 networks that want to join.
Okay, rock and
roll.
A
lot of them. Some big things.
In 5 seconds, Midwest IX is an internet exchange, and you guys do transport from pop to pop, right?
Well, right now we're just focusing on within. So, which is going to be kind of convenient because Netflix is already there, Google's already there, Amazon's Akamai is already there. So all these guys are already there. So we're just kind of facilitating everybody connecting to each other. Cable companies, WISPs, the educational networks, but just basically getting everybody so they have a priced option to get the bulk of their bandwidth at a better quality.
Gotcha. So you guys are playing babysitter.
Yeah. and then a segue into the new branding. I don't really care what we call ourselves too much, but Midwest IX had a Midwest-centric feel to it. I'm not sure why we came to that. But we've got some that want us to go outside of the Midwest. And they thought that having Midwest in the name would be kind of confusing for someone on the East Coast or down south. And so we're coming up with calling ourselves now Fiber Data Exchange. Because we're going to be launching your Houston here soon. We've already got some people in several other states that want us there. And it's just outside of the Midwest. So we actually set up the website and same thing, same people. Actually, the logo is the same design. We just changed the letters and changed the color.
Cool. FD. Sounds cool. But,
so it's FDX.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. oh, well.
Oh, well. Damn it, too late now.
I beat you to it.
Well, that's Mike to a T, isn't
talking.
It? Yeah.
It was like a good dick joke.
Yeah, I'm just going to put that out there. You can send it right back my way. So let's see. Let's move on to another one of the brothers and their projects. Unimus. It has been a month, and in Unimus years, that's like, 15 years? So Thomas Hardy.
15 revisions.
At least. So he's got a lot of new things to talk about. So one is new gear support. I know you've got a lot of new Cisco stuff, like some Nexus. You got some Extreme, some Broadcom, some Quanta switches. I think you added some IgniteNet stuff in there as well, switch-wise. I think you also did some installers, right? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, we are getting closer to release, so we are trying to go all the way on user friendliness. So I've written a Windows installer and a Linux installer, so hopefully now it's just a couple of clicks to install and set up everything. And yeah, a bunch of new gear supported, and 0.3.0, which will actually be release candidate one for the actual release, is getting really close to going out, and it's our biggest patch, biggest update ever so far, and it's going to be huge.
Rock and roll, man. Any new things you're particularly excited about?
Tons. I could talk for an hour, but yeah, we've got the most significant thing and the most excited thing, at least for me, is that we have a new startup manager. So now we actually rewritten completely how an entire Unimus starts, and actually all of it was for user friendliness. So any potential startup issues are actually in the web interface already, so no more needing to go through the logs and see what's wrong, and it will show you right away, what you need to fix if something is broken. And we did a ton of stuff on the database layer and updated user friendliness as well as performance and everything else. It's just, yeah, I could talk for a long time.
Awesome. Rock and roll, man. If we got a little bit of time at the end, I say we circle back, let you kill it. Moving on, a bit of first popping in kind of to the industry news. I see that ISP Supplies bought Titan Wireless, and I don't think this is a terribly big surprise. ISP Supplies, started by Steve Disher. I knew him way back when he was just a little guy. He picked up Titan Wireless, both of them here in Texas. I don't think Titan had been really pushing equipment as hard lately. Tasso owned Titan, and he's now kind of the RF Elements guy, right? Partner in the North American. I think he's been shifting his focus over there, and so this was a good opportunity for him to unload the hardware and distribution piece. I think, from what I understand, that's what he got rid of there. If you guys, I haven't bought from Titan in a really long time, primarily because ISP Supplies is like 10 minutes from my house, so I can just drive over there and pick stuff up. But I don't know about you guys. Any thoughts on that?
Yet, I haven't really dealt with either room too much. You know, similar situation. I've got Wave, Air 802, Baltic, Rock Knock, and CTI all within about 5 minutes of me.
Yeah.
I don't really need to go anywhere else.
Yeah, true story. All right, let's see. Moving right along, let's talk about a little bit of equipment. Mimosa is at the top of the list here. And so Mimosa's point-to-multipoint GPS synchronization, they said, is popping out this year. Did you hear a little bit closer to when it's actually supposed to be released?
I can look at my email.
Soon. I think Q1, Q2. No, I think that's the day I saw was maybe within the next 6 weeks. I think they're looking at getting
a beta, right?
Their beta stuff going.
All right. Any of you guys particularly, Miller mentioned it, so are any of you guys particularly looking forward to this update?
I am.
Have you run into problems where you think GPS sync is going to...
It's not the GPS sync that I'm most interested in. It's the channel selection for the radio. They only have the actual default channels. You can't move it 20 megahertz left or right, or there's no fine selection. So you get this and this, and compared to the B5 Lite, where you have or the B5, you know,
right?
You get all these channels. It's boom, 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 and that's it. And there's no deviation, so you can't work around any of your interference problems. And then it's not TDMA. It's, you know, so.
Okay, so you're saying on the other radios, you can sort of pick what megahertz channel anywhere in the frequency. You can kind of scoot it around.
With a 5 megahertz increments, you know, or something along those lines, whereas this is just...
It's just locked into the defaults.
Default channels, and that's it.
All right. So let's see.
But,
go ahead, Mike.
You know, it currently speaks only standard Wi-Fi, so it, you know, it's, you know, kind of why...
It's Wi-Fi interrupt mode, but if you're only using it with Mimosa equipment and you're not using that, why do that? And I have heard that they are releasing a firmware that will have the channel selection, you know, soon. I'm trying to read the email, but yeah. So that might actually come out before the sync. I don't know.
Seems like
something easy to do.
Very, very cool. All right. So also I noticed Mike had posted up a picture of the Mimosa B11 radios with a SFP port. You know, he's all about SFPs on that bandwagon. He's got a tattoo of it on his butt. That's going to be an 11 gigahertz radio, so that's a backhaul radio, right? Licensed.
I showed it to you in privacy.
Like, well, I didn't describe it. I just said that it was there.
That was kind of the start of my admittedly not very reliable SFP of the day picture posts. I think it's been 2 weeks that I posted maybe 6. But, you know, it's free. You know, so, you know, I wouldn't expect much out of it. But no, it's currently the cheapest licensed backhaul with SFP ports. And, you know, with my SFP trying to post pictures of radios with SFPs, switches with SFPs, so on, SFPs themselves, maybe some vendors will eventually figure out they need SFPs.
Nice, nice. So 11 gigahertz radio, that's going to be a license link, lower frequency. The Air Fiber 24s and then kind of the 60 gigahertz range, those are the open frequencies, right, for higher ranges.
Sure.
But 11, that's going to be lower, which means you're going to get what, better distance, better better raid fade resistance?
These have been shipping for a couple months now, so they're, you know, a bunch of people have them up. My partner in Midwest, Scott, he's got, one of the partners, he's got a couple of those links up, and they're working solid. You know, they do what they say they'll do.
Rock and roll. That's all you can ask. Also, in the Mimosa realm, it says the AF5-18 has been discontinued. So if you were a keen fan of those. You should probably prepare yourself.
A5, right?
Yeah, the...
It's the A5, but it's just the...
It's the taller, higher gain one that they discontinued because the electric... the down tilt that was built into it was a little bit too much, and you couldn't get any range out of it, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think they saw... The other thing I saw them talking about was people were trying to use it at two greater distances, whereas the connectorized one works much better if you're trying to do longer distances. Just put a couple of sectors there instead. So the A514, I've used in a couple of deployments and found it works really well over... what's it in your guys' measurements? It's like, 600 meters. I don't know what that is in miles, sorry.
Like half a mile.
Yeah.
Less than a mile deployments. They're good. Yeah. I mean, they're really targeting those micro pops of those A5s. So.
Sort of like one suburb, like, deployment.
So as an outsider of the Mimosa gear, I'm not really sure what the nomenclature means, right? That what's the difference between an A radio and a B radio?
One is access backhaul.
Oh yeah, they
yeah. Access what? Backhaul and client. So A for so, access, B for backhaul, C for client. Makes it really easy to understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Not like the alphabet soup we're used to with MikroTik, is that what you're saying?
Well, conveniently works out to ABC, so
it's and then the first number is the band, so 5 gig or 11 gig. And then I guess after that it's kind of variable. You know, different products have different things after that, so
very nice. And Mimosa's famous for the auto everything, right?
Yeah, that's my favorite feature.
Alright, cool. Alright, that's, I know we talk about the same stuff over and over, but occasionally we'll get new people that have never heard of this, so you gotta throw those little nuggets in there.
On the occasionally part, we've almost doubled our audience in the past 3 months. 4 months. There's a lot of new people out there.
Awesome.
And we haven't even been here. So, what are you saying? We need to just go away for a few months after every podcast?
Just think of how much growth we'll have now that you're back.
Well, just think about how much attrition there'll be now that we're back. They're like, Jesus, we forgot how just annoying these guys are. Let's get out of here. So moving right along, IgniteNet 60 hertz radios. Where apparently some people were experiencing resets and lockups. I believe Mike or Justin can give a little bit more information on this, but I think it's related to a hardware fault. And it looks like they're doing RMAs. So support at ignitenet.com with subject line company name -ML RMA, and it looks like they're trying to make it right. You guys have any more detail on that?
It seems like some people that don't have a problem at all, like Link, is I've even logged into the radio months, it's just working, and other people who are having a disastrous time. And of course, there's a bunch of speculation as to why, you know, some people have problems and some people don't. Obviously, IgniteNet knows solidly if they're RMAing them. They were saying that, like, if you have gear in place that's a problem, you know, they'll take care of those first. Not having a problem now, they'll still replace it because, there's some hardware fault. You might get away. Likewise, if you've got stuff on the shelf, if you're going to sit on it versus are you going to deploy it right away? But, some things are fixed in firmware, some things are hardware, so they're just sending out new hardware.
Fair enough. I love it when a company admits fault and fixes it. As opposed to deny it forever and ever, and then you just have an angry customer base.
You have any problems with your links, Miller? I remember you had some issues in the beginning. I don't know if you got them resolved.
We've got, half a dozen links, and some of them are fine and some of them aren't. And the beta firmware has helped with some of them. And, it's what gets me is that they can't tell you which models, which production ranges, which serial number ranges have the problem, It's like, they have a hardware problem. We'll just RMA them.
It's
like
it,
I want to do this unless I have to.
I'm guessing that it might be some sort of, you know, quality control thing where, you know, they don't have a range of them because the manufacturing process perhaps was varied and just some things messed up and they, you know, fixed the tooling or whatever.
Or
they
don't know. Bob on the assembly line was causing problems. They can't remember which shifts he was working. You gotcha. All right, moving right along. MikroTik put out newsletter 74. A couple of hardware things. Let's see. The HAP AC light tower, which is really cute. The HAP light that they came out with kind of the weird curvy sides and the bottom. I hate that. I guess it's more feng shui and looks cute, but it's not as functional. I want to like screw things to the wall and it just doesn't fit very well. Whereas this one, it's cute and black and it's got all of the normal features, right? It's got your dual chain 2 gig, single chain 5 gig, right? So it'll do 5 and
it's basically just an AC light in a different box as far as I'm aware.
Yeah
it's, I got one in the office just before I left the US, and the actual mounting system they have for it is quite ingenious. It took a little while for me to work out how it all went together, but the actual base that it clips into as a tower, the same thing unclips and then slides onto the side of it. So you can mount it to the wall and actually mount the bracket and everything and then clip it onto there. And it makes it very easy to remove it and everything as well. So
very cute.
So yeah, you can... The only thing I'm not a huge fan of is... I kind of understand why they've gone like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the front of it. It's like a little... they're similar to like the sides of a dice. So you know which port's up and online. I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but the only way I'll know if it's any good is start putting them in people's houses and see if it makes it easier or more difficult for them to work out what's connected. So
it's cute. I mean, it seems like it's, you know, $50
router. Very, very much consumer.
It's a much better industrial design.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious that they're responding to kind of the ubiquities and the Asus is everybody else making sleek and interesting looking APs. So that's good.
Definitely looks the part.
All right. They also announced an LDF5 light dish feed. So it's basically a small feed horn. You stick on what looks like a DirecTV or dish or just a satellite TV sort of dish. You guys have any opinions on this thing?
No opinion.
There was actually some people who made specifically grids like this for MikroTik before. Some third-party companies in the MikroTik manufacturer partner list. But apparently MikroTik thought the market was big enough that they want to get into it themselves as well. But
well, do they sell that feed horn on its own?
I think they... No, just the feed horn.
Yeah, it's just the feed horn.
Yeah, previously the ones manufactured by the third parties were actually the entire dishes and the mounting and everything, and you put an SXT into it, and it was supposed to actually increase the gain on the SXT by quite crazy numbers. If I remember right, they had one even with 20 dB increase, but it was quite big dishes. So it's actually interesting that MikroTik chose to make this unit. I wonder how much of a market there really is, but
I can't see. I've seen anybody. Yeah, I was gonna say I haven't seen anybody using anything similar to this. That's not to say that it wouldn't work out well. And they're saying if you use a dish up to 100 centimeters, you might get 33 dBi out of it.
It says basically any satellite TV dish with an offset mount can be used for them. So looking at the actual device, it looks like it fits multiple size brackets there, so it should just pop into anything. If that's the case, it's really smart on their part.
And I'm assuming it ships with that little black bracket that sort of ties it to the arm that comes out of the feed, right? I mean, I don't know, though.
There's actually a link to it already on routerboard.com, so there's details up there already. There should be some more images about what it actually comes with. But it looks like there's two... there's a standard Ethernet connector section. There's the housing, the rubber seal and everything. but it doesn't say anything about the doesn't say anything about that bracket. But maybe that bracket's a standard part of those dish installations. I haven't actually done a or replaced a dish installation before, so someone else might know more about that.
I haven't done those yet. Maybe somebody out in the audience has done something similar to this. We can hear from them. Moving right along on the list, they show the CRS317-1G-16S plus RM. Love saying those names. So it's basically a cloud router switch that's got 16 SFP plus ports. And in their marketing, right at the very beginning, they make sure to indicate that it's a layer 3 switch, right, to show that you can actually route on this thing a bit. So it's got 16 SFP plus ports, and it looks like a gig... a regular gig copper port for management. Of course, nobody's going to use that for management. People are going to route through that thing. What else? It says it has hardware-based spanning tree protocol. Says it can, at boot time, either boot to Switch OS or Router OS, which I think is interesting. So it's also, you know, are all of the features of the device going to be available in Router OS and Switch OS? If that's the case, why would anybody ever use Switch OS? I don't know. What do you guys think about this thing?
This is actually really interesting to me because Switch OS has been dead now for, I think, actually a couple of years since the last update to Switch OS. So it's, I think there will be a major new release of Switch OS, and it will be interesting to see what it actually is and what it actually does. Unless I'm completely mistaken and it's just a recompiled current version of SwitchOS, which would be kind of, well, useless.
Disappointing, for sure. I remember one of the things early on, we were talking about switching, and Thomas, I said, what are the things you absolutely require? And one of those was spanning tree protocol. So this sort of puts the MikroTik switching line back in your... in your, I guess, theoretically usable category,
well,
right?
When it fits the rest of the requirements, then. Because spanning tree was just one of those.
Gotcha. So, sort of gets them closer, right? I remember talking about LACP. Was that MikroTik that's adding that, or am I crazy?
Yeah, they said they will be adding hardware LACP to the CRS series as well, which is really exciting. And even more exciting, we now have LLDP support. So,
okay, so let's track back just a second. Spanning tree protocol is right. Loop prevention at layer 2. What else did we talk about? LACP. That's going to be lagging.
Link aggregation,
yeah. So you can have multiple ports bonded together, right, going between devices. And then LLDP, Link Layer Discovery Protocol, it's sort of like an open version of CDP, right? So devices can kind of find each other on a network. Seem like a poor man's version of that? Does that seem okay? Is that acceptable?
No, it's not even. I think a lot of VoIP, a lot of non-Cisco VoIP phones use LLDP for discovery nowadays.
Yeah.
So it's useful to have.
And it's LLDP, it's... More than just discovery, right? Because properly, when those data that LLDP actually, you know, devices talk to each other, they establish topology, and then when that data is properly exposed over SNMP, your monitoring system can get really precise and really well-defined topological information of your entire infrastructure, which is really important to have, you know, like NetXMS, which is fully topology aware. The topology data is built on multiple sources, but one of the primary sources of that is LLDP, and it gives you many advantages to actually have topologically aware monitoring systems, because they can do root cause analysis for your outages. They can correlate the outages to the topology and many other things. Basically, the more data you give a monitoring system or a management system, the better it can be. And having those LLDP topological data fed into those systems makes a huge difference.
And hearing you say all of this is a complete surprise after you put out that YouTube series on how to get going with NetXMS and how to use it. And I know you've consulted a lot on NetXMS. And if anybody listening to this is dying for somebody to help them with NetXMS, Thomas is probably your guy. So let's truck it on to the OmniTick. Oh, go ahead.
There's one last thing with that. If you zoom in on the picture, it has power 1 and power 2. So maybe it has redundant power supplies.
Oh, rock and roll. Sorry, I didn't mean to gloss over that. That's cool. It also looks like it's got a monster heatsink on the back of it, unless I'm crazy.
Yeah. All right, that's all.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, they're starting to respond. Obviously, with something with that high a density, it's a very high likelihood you're going to put that in a very critical part of your network, so why not add that additional power infrastructure to it for sure. The OmniTick 5AC, so you guys remember the old OmniTicks? They look like an upside-down popsicle, you know, the sticks coming up. This doesn't look too different other than they've bridged those popsicle sticks together. It looks kind of sleek and maybe a starship out of Star Trek or something like that. It looks really nice. So it's an AC Omni, and I think, weren't you talking about this, Thomas, how you were surprised they haven't put one out?
I am so happy it's finally out. I've been missing those. Welcome back, OmniTicks.
Yeah, because you guys, I mean, in a previous life, you really got off the ground using the OmniTicks, right? And so now that they have the 5AC version, it's kind of near and dear to your heart.
Yes, very, very much. Because my preferred design of a wireless network is actually doing, you know, many little distribution sites rather than one huge distribution site. Because, well, it's a topic for another day. But it's just better that way for many reasons. And you know, it's a huge difference having just 10 clients per AP and then having an AP for every 1 mile than having one huge tower which has 50, 60, 80 clients, and you just approach the network differently. And as I said, that's a discussion for another day. But OmniTicks, I think, well, not just I think, but they're a really important part of of the design of our network back in the day. And yeah, just welcome back, OmniTicks.
What did you have to say, Cox? I think you had a little.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out, for anyone who hasn't noticed, the new OmniTicks actually support standard 802.18AF pass through. So you can run webcams and things off them. You can run other SXTs or other things if you want to drop it down to 24 volts. They're very good. They've got that sort of or the same 12 volts through to 57 volts support, and they'll feed out whatever you're putting into
them. And then the case design looks pretty nice as well.
Yeah, so we've got the USB port as well. So if you want to put in some sort of 3G, 4G stick or not out of band management, but backup management, you've got that option there as well. So I think it's actually, they've done a really good revamp on that product. And even like the grounding wire is easily accessible there, mm-hmm. whereas in things like the SXT, sometimes it's hard to get to. And it just looks really, whoever's doing the design, they're doing a really good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bottom's got like nice knockouts for individual wires already ready there to go. It also looks like it's coming in right around the $100 mark, which is not terrible.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, let's keep trucking. We're looking at the CCR 1009 upgrades. I think this is a hardware change more than anything else on the inside. And I think Andrew Thrift had been talking about this for ages. That's finally come to fruition. So no switch chip anymore. All of the interfaces go straight to the CPU, which is good.
Very, very good.
Combo port. Looks like you've got... 1 gig/SFP combo that you can switch back and forth from. It says that they also support 100 meg SFPs. I guess people are interested in that. Or do you think maybe this was just a capability the hardware already had, so they were like, hey, we can do this thing now.
I've had a lot of 100 meg SFPs I've run into, and like 100 meg links in rolling outside. So it was always a pain when gear wouldn't support 100 meg. You had to make sure you upgraded both ends, and you always had something that would work with whoever was on the other end. So I'm a big fan of that. This is also the first device they've put out with a combo port, right? I haven't seen it on any others.
The 1100 had something similar to a combo port with the switch.
It had a dual, but
Yeah,
that was they could probably sport. Be used.
Yeah. That was the closest thing, I think.
So it looks like from some of their marketing, due to the new architecture with not using the Switch chip and all that stuff, speed improvements of anywhere between, I don't know, 12 and 30%, somewhere in there, you know, right? Your mileage may vary. This is all marketing stuff that they're putting out. But it's interesting, right? That's a definite improvement. What else do we have?
Is that due to the fact that you don't have the oversubscription with the Switch chip, or is there some other reason for that performance increase?
I'm going to venture out on a limb because I don't really know. I'm saying it's probably a bit of both, right? Probably new architecture.
The Switch chip linked 5 ports together through a 1 gig connection to CPU, and getting rid of that Switch chip, all the ports went directly in now. So that's one of the major performance benefits.
Well, right, yeah, I knew that contributed. I didn't know if that was the only thing or if they had some other stuff they did.
It's hard to know right now.
I don't know that they would ever really tell us either way. You got to keep those secrets close to the chest.
Probably the same CPU.
Let's see. Let's keep trucking down. RouterOS 638, they started dropping those versions. I think it's got TR-069 protocol. That uses an ACS server, I think. So those are people that are familiar with DSL and I think maybe cable modems and things like that. It's a management protocol, right? So you can manage tons of CPEs, customer devices out in the wild with an ACS server for provisioning and things like that. Anybody particularly excited and or interested with this one?
People who are providers.
It's TR-069 is CPE WAN management protocol, I'm pretty sure it is. CWMP is what the other name they have for it. And the idea is that you as an ISP can roll out these sort of devices to your customers. It can be a device the customer can manage and do everything themselves on, but you as the ISP configure it up in advance with your TR-069 server, and you can actually force certain updates. So maybe you want to restrict what wireless channels they can use, or maybe you want to push out firmware updates at certain times because you don't want someone on your network running a bad firmware that causes problems for other users or something. So you can do all those sort of things. And with MikroTik, I'm really excited about this because we deploy devices that we give the customers limited access to. They can go in and change certain bits and pieces. But being able to do that via push those changes out from our side via TR-069 would be really good because we don't have to then use something like SSH or use the API or something. It's going to be the same across MikroTik devices as it is with Netgear devices or Belkin devices or TP-Link devices. They're all going to be able to use the same protocol and just have different commands being fed to them through that. So I'm super excited to see how that goes and get an implementation up and running.
Very cool, very cool. I see, excuse me, also in there they're introducing Key Exchange V2 or Ike V2. What else? STP functionality that they're adding in for the CRS and small Atheris chips to avoid loops and networks. LLDP, as Thomas was talking about earlier. Any of you guys running this? I've running it at home. I'm not actually. I don't have it anywhere in production.
I've seen enough stuff on Facebook and forums that I would upgrade right this second. It seems like some people are having problems with the upgrade on devices. So I don't know if it's user error or RouterOS error.
I've updated a few of my lab/testing routers, but so far so good. But I haven't deployed it to production yet either.
I'm still running one of these on my Edge. I don't typically do that, but was in a scramble one time, inexplicable CPU usage, and I'm assuming it was coincidence that when I installed the 38RC, whatever it was I did, that it fixed the problem. And I'm assuming that the actual release version seems a bit more stable I don't want to take the router down to upgrade it, so I guess we'll just keep cruising on what I'm at.
Rock and roll. All right, so we've beat that Microtech horse for a little bit. Let's move on to...
I actually have two things. One surprising thing is, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the new VAP, the LTE VAP, has not been in any newsletter yet, has not been announced other than at the MUMS. And I'm really hoping those guys will make it to the market soon, because I need them. I want them. I need them in my life.
And that's the... Remind me, what is it again? It's the... is that the one that's so, got the SIM slot where you can...
Yeah, it's the new VAP, so Volt AP, the Microtech little one. And they release a... Well, not released, but they teased an LTE version with integrated antennas and everything. And it will be a really nice all-in-one, I suppose, fairly price-effective device that can terminate LTE for us, because currently we just do 3G modems through USB and blah, blah, blah. And it's actually indoors, outdoors, wall-mountable, and I'm really looking forward to those. And I was actually hoping they would be out soon, but...
I was fairly excited about that announcement as well, because I've been... hounding Mike. I know he's been working on with a couple of different vendors that do the 4G, 5G, whatever, or not 5G, but 3G, 4G cards. And there's always, you know, these compatibility problems as far as drivers and all that stuff goes. And so it was sort of amazing to see Microtech announce that, hey, we're just going to integrate it. So in my mind, that says if you're integrating the hardware, it's always going to work. I'm not going to have to deal with it. It's just finding a good vendor to give me SIM cards that I can shove into these things. And those are fairly affordable nowadays. If you look in the right places, it's just it's the other piece. It's the hardware piece. I know a lot of you guys have found some combinations that work pretty well, right? Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've had a few of the different air cards and stuff by USB. There's a few of the different Sierra ones that work as mini PCI devices as well. But yeah, it used to be always a case of finding the combination of settings that worked, and you'd have to kind of guess some of them. And then when LTE support came along, it was kind of hit and miss for a while. Now, for the most part, you'll get a card, you'll plug it in, and it'll just pick it up with LTE. But yeah, once again, having that device that's integrated, it should just always work, and you put your SIM card in and do the rest from there.
I think Thrift has had problems with the USB ports being able to adequately power some of those devices and things like that, and some inconsistencies between hardware models. So, again, an integrated one theoretically wouldn't have those sorts of problems.
Yeah, when they come out, we are going to buy a whole bunch of them and deploy immediately.
That's awesome.
I'm really hoping they work. And the other side is the TR069 discussion. And I think that's also a discussion unto itself. Yeah. But I'm glad Microtech is adding support. But like TR has advantages and disadvantages, because now we are getting into a debate about management, configuration management, about automation, about deployment processes and all of that. And that really is a debate unto itself. But maybe something for another day. But TR, just know that it's nice that Microtech has it, but maybe, you know, make sure that it's the right technology for your use case before you deploy it. And that's all I'm going to add into that, because otherwise we would go on to a really long tangent again.
Well, let me throw one thing out there, right? So the dude is not dead, right? They're working on the dude. What's the dude controller package? Capsman? Right? So
that's the wireless control package.
Yeah. So you take the dude, you take Capsman, you take TR69, you roll them on the one. Maybe they're gonna magic some stuff.
Well, maybe we end up with three completely different management systems.
Oh, that's the dream.
That's the best thing about standards. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's going to end up the same way that OpenFlow ended up. Anybody remember Microtech OpenFlow?
Oh, yeah. Vaguely.
Yeah, the, the separate package that came out like 3 years ago and hasn't been touched since. So hopefully TR won't end up being that way, because currently it's CLI only configuration and it's a separate package as well. So I'm hoping that they stick with it and pull it through.
Cool.
Yeah, that'd be good.
All right. Anything else, MicroTik? Are you guys ready to move on to Ubiquiti? All right, Ubiquiti it is. Ubiquiti announced AirOS 8 and 6 releases. I'm not a huge Ubiquiti guy on kind of the backhaul distribution side, so I don't have any strong opinions on this. Do you guys?
I've heard people say that they're amazing and people say that it's shit. So I guess we'll...
So it's okay.
Normal. Yeah, there you go.
The usual business.
I'm more inclined to believe the people that say that it's amazing, although throw some salt on it, because they went through a ton of these. And generally the people I've been hearing talking about the release versions being good are more active people. Perhaps they know more than the others. I don't know. You know, I don't know all the situations. I haven't really read all the discussions about it. But for those that don't know, 8 is the version for the AC platform that provides backwards compatibility to the N platform, excuse me. Event 6 is the platform, or is the version for the N platform that provides forward compatibility to the AC platform. So you have to run 8 on your ACs and 6 on your Ns, and then they'll talk. That allows you to have a migration path, and the AC radios, even if you only have an AC access point and all your clients are still N, you get something like a 20 or 30% throughput increase just because of having a better access point. And, 8 comes with a few nice one, Andrew. I just noticed Andrew, we changed topic from MicroTik to Ubiquiti, and he changes his shirt from MicroTik to Ubiquiti.
The band is going to get something out of it.
So I guess we should open this up to the vendors. If you send us all shirts, we will wear them during your particular portions of the
Is that as long as there's a $100 bill pinned to each shirt, we will wear them? Is that true? All right.
I've got a few. I need a
Unimus one. Oh, all right. We'll get right on that.
All right. So moving right along, Para's got a set of blog posts he's been putting out, which I think is kind of interesting, right? I'm sure the marketing people were beating the hell out of him to get that out. It's mostly about the mesh gear that they've been putting out, which I think is funny. So I've been watching the Tested podcast. You guys watch that? You know, it's like Adam Savage's thing. They do my favorite things of the year. One of the guy's favorite things was the Ubiquiti mesh stuff. He's like, I just plug it in and it works everywhere, even when I'm on the toilet. That's the dream, isn't it? The ultimate dream. I had a dilemma. I know I'm diverging a bit here, but the other day I had to go poo really bad, and I was halfway to the bathroom and I realized I didn't have my phone. And so you're in this weird limbo state. It's like, is it possible for me to go to the bathroom without my phone? How long will it take me to find the phone? And ultimately,
will I poop my pants before?
Yeah, right? Right? It's kind of like, that's the closest Google thing to gambling I do. It's like, oh, am I going to make it? I don't know. It's pretty exciting.
Living dangerously.
I ultimately...
Google tried to address this years ago with Google TP Fiber. It came up through the toilets. He had internet right there.
Shitty.
This is a really shitty conversation.
Buzzing! Ultimately, I know you guys are anxious to know. I found the phone and I made it to the toilet boat. So I didn't just go poo without the phone. It's pathetic. I can't I can't just
it's
go
an important part of today's society, being able to use Twitter or check Facebook while you're in the toilet. Like,
yeah,
that's wasted productivity
time. Do you think that's where Trump sends all his tweets while he's on the John?
Yeah, they're like, damn it, we can hear you in there, Donald. Stop tweeting.
You know he's getting older and his prostate, you know, that's why he's sending out so many tweets, because he's just constantly in there. Anyway, I think... I think it's cool. It gives you a little bit of history into Per himself, and I'm fortunate enough to meet him a few times. He's actually a really genuine guy, pretty cool. So it's sort of neat. Most of it's marketing fluff, though, so it is what it is. I see Hammy, shots fired, put EPMP Elevate right here.
I just snuck that in our lineup here. Totally forgot about it until we got to Ubiquity on here. EPMP Elevate. For those of you that remember, like Bitlomat, they had a path from Ubiquity radios to their platform. Bitlomat may still be around. I haven't really seen them much anymore. Cambium took a page out of their book, and you know, since everybody's using the same hardware underneath anyway, Ubiquiti, Microtik, Cambium, Bitlomat, it's all the same Atheros chips underneath. Cambium made a software load that will put their EPMP platform onto your Ubiquiti hardware. And the advantage of that is that EPMP sync. Ubiquiti has not been able to figure that out yet. Hopefully soon. And it's fairly reasonably priced. It's I think it's like $35 if you buy one, maybe $29 if you buy 10 packs. But it's a software license for loading it onto your Ubiquiti client to then mate up with your Cambium access point.
Is it Microtik too, isn't it?
They will be adding Microtik. Microtik isn't currently available.
Early 2017, it says.
What I think is... go ahead, Mike.
I'll say, and, that's a company that is... They just keep building and building and building, and like, there's not a whole lot of, you know, setbacks that we see from some of the other vendors. You know, they still have some issues from time to time, but it's, you know, generally steps forward, and you know, I like what they're doing.
You know what I think is interesting concept, right? So you throw up the Cambium sector up on your tower, you roll this new firmware. Why not just give the firmware for free to do the EPMP Elevate? Why actually charge for it? I mean, think of how many more people you'd have jumping on that bandwagon.
Obviously, if you give it away for free, you should have more people than charging for it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, they're giving away kind of, you know, their bread and butter. You can get the access points for not a lot of money.
You're afraid that if you gave it away for free, people would just go and buy the cheapo Ubiquiti APs, load the firmware, and use those instead of buying the actual Cambium stuff.
Yeah, because a Ubiquiti radio plus the Elevate license does cost more than a Cambium radio, but it costs less than rolling a truck out to replace the Ubiquiti radio with the Cambium radio. So if you're just migrating to their platform because you've run out of, you know, room and you need sync and you need, you know, some other scale advantages that Cambium brings, you know, what's $35 or, well, $30 to avoid having to roll a truck?
I guess it's probably less than a month's worth of internet. It's interesting. I don't know. Maybe you give a free version that's handicapped a little bit. That way, you know, hey, I can try this out on a tower, not a big deal. Or maybe give the first, you know, 40 licenses free. or something like
it,
that.
To put this somewhere in, or to provide some context on Cambium, and we don't talk about that a lot here, Cambium has been notorious for licensing everything. They're getting better, but on their PMP platform, like, and I'm wrong on the numbers, but as example, they had a 4 meg license, a 10 meg license, a 20 meg license, like a 40 meg license, and an unlimited throughput license. So if you were to upgrade your clients to faster speeds, you had to go buy a license for each of the CPEs to upgrade them. Like, get anything else other than this, you can now go faster. And it's just like that on their backhauls. The backhauls have more things that are licensed out. So I think Cambium is going to have a license to it. They're just nickel and diamond.
Making that, getting that movie check. I get it. All right. Let's see. Anybody else have any opinions on the EPMP Elevate stuff? Yes, no, guess not. All right. Last hardware-ish announcement is I've got here on... this is the Siklu EtherHall. There was a mandatory update for some of those. I'm not sure what the mandatory update entailed, but if you're running that gear, you might want to take a look. I'm not saying it's a huge exploit, but maybe they found a fairly sizable bug, probably something to that effect. What do you think, Mike?
I think it was a security fix, right?
Was it? Okay.
I don't remember. I don't have any Siklu, so I didn't look into it any further than, yep, here's the announcement, moving on.
It was mandatory to maintain UI access to the ODUs. So do they have some sort of centralized management system or cloud-hosted management for them? I'm not using any Siklu.
I'm not using any Siklu stuff.
I seem to remember reading about it, and people were saying that it didn't come out for all of the Siklu platforms. I might be completely wrong, so I'm sorry if I'm bashing Siklu right now, but I seem to remember it was a exploit that could have been exploited on the platforms, and they fixed it, but they only released it for currently supported platforms, so all their Siklus out in the field that this patch didn't get pushed through are still vulnerable. And I seem to remember that some people were complaining about that.
Interesting.
People complain about everything.
Yeah. That's basically what we're doing here for an hour every 2 weeks. All right, guys, so we've been trucking it for about an hour. We actually have more content, but a lot of it is sort of the open-ended where we go down all these crazy rabbit holes and pop out who knows where, when, why, and how. So let's save those for next time. We actually got through most of the list, surprisingly. Not surprisingly, Tom wasn't here, so we got through most of the list. So let's close it out. So we started with Thomas. Let's start with Thomas again. Thomas, if you're out there and you're just dying to get a hold of you and somebody just can't stand it anymore, they want to run their hands through those luscious curls of yours, how is it that they go about contacting you?
Facebook, LinkedIn, Google for me, email, whatever. Or actually just come and visit us on the Unimus forums, whatever. I'm fairly easy to find.
There you go. Rock and roll. He's out there. You can find him. Andrew Cox, if people want to find you out on the interwebs, how do they do that?
So the microtik-radaros.com site's still up. Just admin at microtik-radaros.com. Otherwise, my consultant details on the MicroTik site, including my Skype number, my Skype account and everything. Otherwise, message the Brothers Wisp. We get on Facebook and check the messages when they come through. So I think it's like Mike and I that normally spot them.
Rock and roll. So Mike Hammett is the king and queen of Facebook. So he is the one who is always pumping out all of these juicy details. So if you like all this content that's actually fallen out of Mike's head, believe it or not, just think of all the things that he forgets about. It'd be amazing. Since he is updating the Facebook regularly, he's always responding to your comments. We're actually getting really good feedback going on those comments. I mean, there's a lot of really good discussion. It's kind of blowing me away, you guys, just the interest in all the stuff that we're putting up there. I like a lot of the open-ended questions that people are popping in there, like thoughts, you know, and then letting people sort of go on there. So if you want to get a hold of Mike, that's through the Facebook page is one of the best ways. But if not there, do you have a different method you'd prefer people to get a hold of you at, Mike?
That's probably the easiest, because I've got so many other things that we'll just cut it there. I get it's easy. Just type my name. You'll find me.
Easy, man.
You'll find him, and he responds to everyone. All right, Justin Miller, if you're not looking sad in your TARDIS onesie, where can people find you if they want to?
I have a blog, dynastatic.net, dynastatic.net. Contact form on there that I think works.
Yeah, don't sound so depressed about it. I've got a blog.
Well, he's not a salesman, he's a tech guy.
Yeah, fair enough. Man, you always got to be pushing that brand. You got to brand yourself. Dynastatic. All right, excellent. So I am Greg Soule. You can find me at gregsoule.com because I'm also a narcissist, obviously. Why else would I make a website that? I do some bloggy things on there, not as much as I would like to. You can email me, greg@gregsoule.com, find me on there. I'm not great about Facebook. Like, random strangers, it's like kind of like, I put pictures of my kids, you know, like vandalizing the neighbor's house. I don't know if I just want every stranger to see that stuff. But I'm usually fairly easy to get a hold of. So, again, thank you guys for listening. If you want to contact us, the best way, honestly, the best way is through Facebook. Some of you old schoolers that don't like the Facebooks, you can also hit us at contactus@thebrotherswisp.com. We've actually gotten a couple things through there. Any comments, suggestions, questions, please pump them out to us. We're always looking for new material to talk about. Because, I mean, we talk about what's interesting to us, but how do we know what's interesting to everyone else? So I guess from all of us to you guys, thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Happy New Year.
Catch you later.